This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Ready? One. You will do this four times with the left, four with the right, then eight times with both.
Welcome back. Chucky's on 106.7 The Fan. We are live on NBC Sports Washington. Presented by EMP-1A Weight Loss. Structure, accountability, results. The standard for weight loss in the area. It's EMP1AWeightLoss.com. Coming up at 7:20, Kevin Van Valkenburg, senior golf writer for ESPN.com. We'll get in the U.S. Open, Tiger Woods, and more. But join us right now to talk some Redskins. Yes, we're going to talk some Redskins. John Keim covers the Skins for ESPN and ESPN.com. He joins us on the Mattress Warehouse Hotline. What's up, John?
I am the forgotten guy lately.
You are.
It's been kind of nice.
Yeah, you've been flying
under
the
radar. For a good reason. It's been great.
Yeah, but awesome. You're going to be so popular in about 2 months.
especially
with us.
Yes.
Yeah, what was it like, though, for you during this caps run? Because you still did have to like go to these OTAs and these mini camps and everything.
Well, the weirdest thing was the other day, because it was covering the replacement players getting their rings and even going out, you know, doing some practice stuff, knowing that almost everybody's tuned into the parade and that's what they're really wanting to see or talk about. And you're kind of like, well, I'm over here, you know. And it's, but that was the weird part, because that was a direct clash and, you know, unfortunate timing or whatever. But I just felt like, you know, you're tweeting something about this when it's the parade that really matters. And I personally, I thought it was, the whole thing was great, because I was thrilled that they won and all that. But it was different being in a situation where you know that the interest is elsewhere. And I think that's healthy. So, but it was different.
So it's basically been a month, right, of mini camps and OTAs. What are kind of some of the big things coming out of that month?
Yeah, the things that consistently jump out is the first running back, Darius Geis. And I think you don't want to like overhype somebody's talent. I mean, I think as a personality, he's really big, because he's just got that, you know, he's always smiling. It's infectious. Loves being out among the people, very popular on social media. So he's already popular because of his personality and who he is. As a player, it's really hard to say completely what he is, because they haven't even put on the pads. And, you know, I always remind people, it's spring. They're not in pads. They're not going full speed, et cetera. We don't really know what a running back's going to do until you get in the game, et cetera. But what you can see with him is that there is an explosion when he cuts. Jay Gruden talked about that. He felt like Geis was faster and a little bit more explosive than they thought he would be. And he runs with a little bit of patience before he makes that cut. So those are the things that you file away to say, okay, let's see how that translates when the pads go on. But he's a guy that jumped out. And, you know, he caught the ball well for a guy who didn't catch a lot in college. Then the other one was Alex Smith. And, again, Alex Smith has a track record of productivity and a background to say this is who he is. Now, he's a guy that has continued to get better over the years. How much better will he get? I don't know. This is a good system for him, just like the Andy Reid system was a good system for him. But what you see, what you hear from players is how much they like, you know, just, I guess, his veteran knowledge. And he's kind of a calming influence in the huddle. They feel like he's decisive with the ball. I was thinking about this morning. I don't remember him getting picked off during the practices that we were at. And that's kind of rare, and that's one of his strengths. Now, yesterday he almost got picked off by Mason Foster, but it stood out because I just don't remember seeing it. I could be wrong, but I don't remember seeing it. you know, and so I think there's things like that that jump out at you. The rest of it is just, it's spring practice, you know. You have to put it into context, but those are the two big takeaways for me.
John, what's the fate of Rob Kelly? He was a guy who was oft injured last year, only had 62 attempts in 2017. I believe he slimmed down a bit. He definitely doesn't want to give up his spot on the roster. How's he looked, and what's the latest on him and the way the rest of the running backs are looking in camp?
Yeah, he's consistently worked as their top running back, as their first running back. How long that continues, I don't know, but that's where he's at. But that all, what that also tells you is the respect he has from the coaches. And, you know, he does look a little bit quicker when you watch him. Now, that can also be because it's his third year in the system now, and you're confident in what you're doing and your reads, et cetera. Before he got hurt last year, I mean, he was the guy. And so I wouldn't be surprised if he opens up as their top guy, but I'd be really surprised if Geis isn't the guy by the time the season starts. But again, what it tells you is how much they like him, and you can't assume that they're just going to keep, like, Geis, P. Ryan, and, you know, Chris Thompson, and maybe some other guy who can do what Thompson does. I think Kelly is absolutely in that mix, and should be. I mean, he was better than P. Ryan when he was playing last year. What we don't know is where, you know, speaking of the other backs, is where has P. Ryan improved? Because, you know, when he played, a couple things they wanted is more patience out of him. There were times where he was early, and especially in his season last year, where he's going ahead of the pulling guards, for example, or the pulling tight end, for example, and you can't do that. That was early. And then what they also want to see is his ability to get to, you know, his contact balance, for lack of a better, the yards after contact. Can he do that? That was an area where they wanted him to improve last year. And so, you know, can he get that starting the preseason? So I think that's going to be something to watch. But I would put Kelly and, you know, Geis and Chris Thompson ahead of the other ones. And then I think it'll get interesting, because I think there's a lot of guys who can offer them something that others cannot. Byron Marshall, Bibbs, those guys, they really like Byron Marshall when they signed him last year off of the Eagles practice squad. Then he gets hurt. But he's a guy who can offer you some things that Chris Thompson does. So if something happens to Thompson, you have your guy there. Would they go in that direction? And then a guy like the young undrafted guy, Martez Carter, I think he's going to be one to watch the preseason as maybe a guy who can kind of work his way onto the practice squad. And, you know, he would be a third down back type. So if you don't want to go with Marshall or Bibbs, you could always go with Carter on the practice squad. So in case something happens to Thompson, you'd have a guy you're kind of developing there.
What about Keith Marshall? Is he still on the roster?
Yeah, but he's still coming back from a knee injury. He wasn't out there doing anything.
Oh, okay. All right.
Joined by John.
Yeah, he was a guy that was interesting last year. I just think 2 years in a row with injuries like that is going to be awfully tough.
Yeah, that's too bad for him.
Joined by John Keim, covers the Redskins for ESPN and ESPN.com. He joins us on the Mattress Warehouse Hotline. Last year, so much hype about Terrell Pryor based on what he was doing in these OTAs and mini camps and training camp and all that stuff. So I hesitate to get too much of interpretation on what you see, but what have you seen from Paul Richardson, the acquisition from Seattle?
Yeah, you know, and that, man, we were talking about the Pryor stuff yesterday, and it's funny because last spring I wasn't impressed with Pryor. I thought I'd see a little bit more, and then in the summer training camps, like, okay, that's the guy you thought you'd see, and you're kind of convinced going into the year that he's going to make these big plays. With Richardson, what you see is speed, and he's a slight guy. He's very lean, but he is very, very fast, and I think he can run more routes than they anticipated. What I see from him a lot in the spring, though, is a lot of times clearing areas out and them trying to take advantage of it with guys underneath like Jamison Crowder. So I think his ability to help do that is what I've seen most throughout the spring. Now, he has made some catches down the field. When I've been out there, haven't always seen him like making one play after another where you just say, wow. But he has made some plays down the field. You have seen the speed. But again, I think what you see sometimes is the way they use that speed to open up other situations, even for him, comeback routes. So some things that I didn't see Seattle always do with him, and I think they're going to expand a little bit of what he can do. He'll make some plays on the field, but it's going to be the threat of what he can do that will help open up some other areas for others.
I'm trying to figure out what else to ask you.
By the way, the scary thing about Richardson is he likes to put ketchup on his tacos. I don't know that right. I can trust him with anything he's going to do
That's inexcusable. I can't endorse that one.
Yeah, that's
I've never
one.
Even heard of that before, John. I didn't know that was a thing.
I hadn't either.
John, give
me... I don't know. I think the only thing you should put on with ketchup are burgers, I guess.
Pretty much, yeah. You know?
Give us the update sort of on the offensive line and, like, with the injury. Like, you know, we talked about it a month or so ago with Kwanjo out. They re-signed Sean Laval, et cetera. If you had to put together your starting offensive line right now, what would it be?
Well, this is going to assume health for Trent Williams and Morgan Moses. And Trent Williams told us yesterday that he's going to be ready before training camp, so he'll be fine. Morgan Moses will be fine for camp. So those two at the tackles, and then Laval and Brandon Sheriff at the guard, and Chase Roullier at center. That would be exactly what I would expect. I'd be surprised if it's anything else.
So no real changes?
No real change. And the change is health, that Trent Williams won't be bad, you know. For them, they have to hope that Williams doesn't battle these knee injuries all season, and same with Morgan Moses with his ankles. And if the group can play together, then I think they feel pretty good. You know, when it comes to the run game, though, it's like they have to play together well, but I think the tight ends need to do a better job blocking as well. And I think the receivers have to help a little bit more, but those tight ends have to be more consistent blocking than they've been the last year and a half. And I think that's the other thing that what they hope for with a guy like Geis is, if you're not always going to get that, get a guy who can help create yards for himself as well. Because there are times where, I remember talking to coaches 2 years ago about this out there, where they're watching a guy for, like, say, a Devontae Freeman in Atlanta. It's like, you know, this guy's trapped, he makes a cut, and now it's a 10-yard gain. They didn't feel like they had anybody there that could do that. You know, Rob Kelly does a good job of taking those negative 2-yard runs and turning them into positive 3 or 4. They wanted someone who can maybe do a little bit more than that. So I think that's where you can watch what is Geis's impact in that area. Can he have one? So if you don't, but I think the line, that's what it'll be.
John Keim from ESPN, ESPN.com. Thanks as always.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks buddy. John.
All right, coming up next, we will shift to the U.S. Open. How's Tiger Woods going to fare?
They've already teed it.
Who are your favorites? Kevin Van Valkenburg, senior golf writer for ESPN.com, joins us next here on The Junkies.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Welcome back. Junkies on 106.7 The Fan. We are live on NBC Sports Washington. Remember, coming up at 8:20, Chelsea James from the Washington Post will talk about the Nationals and their phenom. The 19-year-old Juan Soto hit 2 home runs at Yankee Stadium last night in the 5-4 win. But join us right now to talk some U.S. Open golf. Kevin Van Valkenburg, senior golf writer for ESPN.com. What's up, Kevin?
How are you guys?
Good.
Hey, doing great. You know, it's weird. We've been caught up in this this Caps euphoria, this kind of unexpected Stanley Cup run, and we haven't really been focusing on the U.S. Open. A couple of us are huge golf fans, and it's crazy. It snuck up on us. You know, what are we missing besides the obvious sort of Tiger Woods talk?
Well, I mean, I definitely don't think Russell back the number one ranking in the world, and I would say there's a real good chance that DJ could throw like a 68, 67 right off the front here today and sort of just take control of the U.S. Open. But we'll see. I mean, it's Shinnecock's a great venue. It's really changed a little bit from years ago. They took out some trees and made the fairways wider a little bit and kind of mowed down areas around the green. So you know, you'll see some kind of creative players, I think, in the mix, even if they don't necessarily hit it straight. But you got to hit it relatively straight here. I played here, hashtag name drop, media day a little while, and
right.
You got to, if you're hitting it in the head, you're making double every time. So,
right, you're just done. Not to mention the wind. I mean, this is a link style course. It's on the coast. Not surprised it's going to be some wind. The wind is supposed to kick up in the afternoon when Tiger tees it at 150. I'm just kind of watching the live looking on Golf Channel now. The wind's already gusting a little bit now. I mean, that's a great equalizer, Kevin. As you know, on these courses, the wind can be brutal.
Absolutely. There's sometimes going to be a two-club wind, and there's any players who can really sort of control their ball flight into that. I mean, if Spieth were putting better, he would be my pick because he's just such a creative sort of thinking type player and really knows how to play the wind well. But, I think a Justin Thomas or a DJ, somebody who can just kind of power right through the wind and knows how to flight the ball down when they need to, that would be good to pick. I'll be real surprised if Tiger is able to contend. He certainly creative enough and smart enough to kind of figure his way around this course, but just driving it too wayward to really, I think, to not have one day where he shoots 75, I think, but we'll see.
What are we expecting around par? So in 2004, Retief won it at 4 under, shot 276. It's a par 70 for people that aren't paying attention. Corey Pavin, remember back in 95 when he hit, what did he hit, the 4-wood there, whatever it was? He finished at even par. Ray Floyd, if you go back as far as 86, he won at 279 at 1 under. Are we going to see scores right around there? Is that what we're expecting?
I think so. Yeah, they're not supposed to get really any weather. It did rain a bunch yesterday. So, I think if you get the early, late draws like this, then that's probably the more gettable side of the draw. It's not quite like the British in where there's one clear side of the draw. But I picked 3 under. I said that would be sort of my pick. It just sort of depends on kind of how much they're able to get the greens, baked out and firmed up. I don't think we'll ever see kind of where we did, in 04, where they completely kind of lost control of the golf course. And there was a ton of, big scores because they just balls couldn't hold greens. I think they know a lot more about, agronomy and stuff, and they're able to kind of tell when the greens are really desperate for water and stuff. And it's just not quite as hot as it was back that weekend, but I still think these players are so good now, and they hit it so far that it's not super long. It's not like it's 7,900 yards here. So it would not surprise me at all if, under par wins this championship.
Yeah, I mean, Kevin, talk about Spieth. You mentioned Jordan Spieth. He won this event in 2015 at Chambers Bay, and he was the greatest putter in the world a couple of years ago, and he can still get hot. We saw what he did on Sunday at the Masters, and he just made everything. But he's 190th on tour right now in strokes gained putting, and that's just a horrible number for him. Like you said, if he was putting better, he'd be your favorite because his ball striking is just absurd. What did he do? Why did he feel like he had to change things? I'm guessing I heard he changed ball position. Why did he feel like he had to make a change in his putting?
He said something to the effect of that his setup got all off. So, I think he just sort of had some bad habits started to creep in and, started compensating for different things. And I think, honestly, the thing he won't say is that it kind of got in his head a little bit, that he, when you're used to being such a great putter and you start to miss 5-footers, then you start thinking about him a lot. And one thing, I think we probably all understand is, amateur golfers, is when you're young and you don't really, you're scared, you don't have any scar tissue, you don't have a problem with running putts 4 feet past. But the more of those you miss, the more of those it's sort of difficult not to think about, I can't seem to make any of these. And that's why, people rarely get to be a better putter as they get older. Now, Jordan's much too young to really have a lot of scar tissue, but a little bit of that stuff can sort of creep in. You can be super bold when you don't have anything to lose. And when you start to, feel a little bit of pressure, God, I really ought to be scoring more, than some of those 5-footers are going to look more and more difficult. He was talking yesterday about how when the wind's blowing out here on this kind of POA, that, a 4-footer can be a 50-50 proposition based on, when you hit it. You could try to hit it, outside right edge, and it could miss left, and then you hit the same putt a minute later based on the wind, and it could go, you know, right in the heart. So, you know, it's, some of it is luck. Some of it is kind of your steely nerve and being able to kind of wheel it in and take, if you miss it, come back and hit a four-footer on the way back. So, I don't know. Jordan, he's not going to putt this poorly, like, forever, but I'm not quite sold that he's going to just find it based on, like, having a couple good practice sessions.
So you don't feel like he can put it all together for 4 days this week?
If you know, if he shoots a good round early and starts to gain a little confidence, then, you know, I like it better. But, you know, if he opens with a 74 or something, I don't really love his chances of being able to fight back. Because someone's going to throw a little round out this morning. I mean, I think you'll see at the end of the day, somebody will have shot 67 just because there's not a lot of wind right now, and it's soft from all the rain yesterday, and so they just can't firm it up, you know, as fast as they would like to. And so if you start the day 8 shots back and US Open, that's a hard climb to make.
We're talking to Kevin Van Valkenburg, senior golf writer for ESPN.com. So I got to ask you the obligatory Phil question. Phil's been a runner-up 6 times at the U.S. Open. We all know his history there. And you know what? Having a pretty darn good year for a guy who's going to turn 48, I believe, this week. Do we like his chances at all? I don't know that he's necessarily played fantastic the last couple weeks. But, where is he in terms of his form and our confidence level that he might be able to put something together here?
You know, he shot 65 in the final round in Memphis his last time out. So, I mean, that's pretty good.
Right.
Pretty good round to walk into the U.S. Open over. He's still such a wayward driver, you know, relatively speaking, for a PGA Tour player, that he's going to be times when, you know, he's bringing double into play. Will he be smart enough to be able to turn those into bogeys instead of doubles? You know, the thing about Phil is that, like, in those U.S. Opens and at Wingfoot and the one here, is that his short game was so incredibly good, and we didn't really, like, pay attention to strokes gained back then. But, you know, I got to think that if we could look at the numbers, or if could even look back at them, that he would be gaining, you know, 4 or 5 strokes around the green because his short game was so good. I don't know that his short game is quite at that level, and I don't even think he would contend it is now, but it is interesting around here now, where if you miss greens, there's like kind of runoff areas here instead of where it would kind of the ball in the past would go into sort of deep rough. So if Phil's able to sort of chip well and use, you know, his creativity to take advantage of some of this misses, then, you know, he could be in contention. He's putting actually really well this year. It's just that he's still driving it crazy. And even with wider fairways here, I don't know that you can drive it all over and be in contention.
Kevin, Ricky Fowler faces the same questions 4 times a year at majors. Every single year, he's got 8 top 5 finishes at majors without winning one. He's creeping up on the record, which I think is 11, by Lee Westwood. And he was asked about this yesterday. I'm sure you were probably there in the media center. You know, he finished 2nd at the Masters. He was unbelievable at the Masters, but he always seems to have that one round where he kind of puts himself in a hole and he's got to dig out of it. Now, he can dig out of it. He's that good, but he still has not won one yet. He's 18-1 favorite here, which is a little bit better than Brooks Koepka, who's the defending champion. What do you expect from Ricky? He's been playing really well this year.
Yeah, it's always a tough thing with Ricky. I mean, I kind of made some excuses for him for a while and felt like, you know, sometimes you just get beat. It's not like you can really, like, affect the other players and how they shoot. I mean, that's golf's not like basketball and stuff. There's no defense. But, you know, last year at Erin Hills, I sort of really felt like, you know, you're too talented to not win one of these. Like, he could have done what Koepka did. And he just really, I think, you know, he had sort of a more conservative game plan. He just didn't really grab it by the throat. And it's funny when Ricky has so many kind of like fans who are like non-golf fans. When you write anything mildly critical of him, people just lose their minds because they don't want to hear that, like, he hasn't stepped up in a big moment and shot that great round. Now, some of that is like circumstance, like Patrick Reed, you know, holding on just long enough at the Masters and Ricky, you know, losing by a shot. I mean, if Patrick Reed doesn't make that putt on 17, you know, Ricky Fowler could easily win the Masters in the playoff. But,
right,
you know, so
some of it is luck, but I really think he's too good to not step up and win one of these. And eventually, like, you kind of have to. You can't keep making excuses forever about, well, you know, this other guy just happened to have a better day. Like, at some point, that has to be you. You have to be the person who says, you know what, come catch me. I'm just flat out better than everyone. And, you know, I think he'll be in contention here, but, you know, it's just, when is it that moment going to be like, you know, he just does what Nicklaus and Tiger did. Like, you know what, I'm running away from everything. I'm just flat out better than you are today.
Kevin, do we see the DJ that won the U.S. Open in 2016 or the one that missed the cut last year at Erin Hills? He comes in on a heater, won the St. Jude last week in dominant fashion.
I think we'll see the one, maybe not quite the way he was at Oakmont because he was just unbelievable there. But I think we'll see, you know, a guy who's definitely in contention. I don't know what happened at Erin Hills. Like, that course just completely messed with his head. And if you missed at Erin Hills, you were dead. I mean, here you can sort of wedge it out and try to get up and down the par. That, you know, the rough at Erin Hills, or the sort of hay, was, you know, 4 feet deep in a lot of places. And even none of that. Erin Hills was just such a weird thing because all the big bombers, you'd think with wide fairways, they would have had a huge advantage. But Rory and Jason Day and DJ all completely got ejected early and never really even, you know, were even potentially like going to try to make the cut. And so I don't know whether that mentally, like, he just checked out earlier that one, but I think he's a lot more dialed. And walking with him yesterday and Spieth, and just watching him hammer the ball into some fairways that are, you know, wider than they used to be, I can't see him not being in contention somehow this week.
All right, Kevin, before we let you go, you know, I'm in a bunch of golf pools. I've already entered my picks. I've got some tournament matchups. I'm wagering on some tournament matchups. Give us your favorite, and then give us a long shot that you like.
I like Justin Thomas. I think he hits it high and far, and he is just has the kind of U.S. Open mentality of, like, he's super intense, but not like a John Rahm where he's going to flip out and break clubs and smash things if that doesn't go well. Like, he's just pretty dialed in and pretty focused all the time. In terms of, like, an outsider, you know, I mean, I think if Justin Rose count as like a dark horse, I mean, he's a former U.S. Open champ, but, you know, he's just kind of loves these kind of courses where par is a pretty good score. And so he would be my kind of pick that's, you know, maybe a little bit off people's radar. But I think Justin Thomas gets done this week and ends up, you know, having two majors and kind of gets into that argument of, like, you know, is he or Spieth the best player of this generation?
Mm-hmm.
All right, buddy. Great stuff. Thank you, Kevin. Appreciate it.
See you back, guys.
All right. It's Kevin Van Valkenburg from ESPN.com.
And Justin Rose is not a long shot.
I think he's third on the money list.
He's
a 14-1 shot.
Well, third or fourth.
He is in a sense that you don't hear a lot of people picking him. I think he's like an under-the-radar guy. He's an incredible player. He's not a long shot.
Definitely not a long shot.
He's not a long shot. But you don't typically hear people pick him. People pick DJ, Justin Thomas, or whatever. You know,
true.
Jason Day.
True. But based on the Vegas odds, he's second behind DJ. DJ's about 8-1, and Justin Rose and Thomas are both pretty equal, about 14-1.
If I had to pick one that I'd like to watch besides Tiger and Phil, you know, the sentimental choices, I love it when Dustin is on fire.
Yeah. It's going to be interesting to see, because Thomas, DJ, and Tiger all play together for the first 2 days. And, you know, Tiger bombs it now. He's been killing the ball off the tee. He doesn't know where it's going most of the time, but DJ...
He's tightened it up a little bit.
Yeah, DJ absolutely murders the ball as well. So it's going to be interesting to see how those guys kind of navigate around the course.
One thing, and not to get caught up in it, we can move on, and this will be our golf talk for the day. But for the last couple of weeks, if you watch Tiger, he's been in a lot better rhythm and tempo, and he was hitting a lot more fairways.
Yeah.
So I think that's something, if you want to watch it from afar, if JP wants to turn it on for a minute, if you see Tiger flailing away and slamming his driver on the ground again, that doesn't bode well. I say it'd be a catastrophic week. If you see him in the nice tempo and rhythm the way he's been the last couple weeks, maybe he could stick around and be interesting. You know, I don't think he's going to win. I would never pick him to win a U.S. Open between now and the rest of his career.
Right.
But I think if he's in a nice rhythm and tempo and he's making smart choices off the tee, et cetera, he can hang around.
Maybe a lot of three woods and irons off the tee this week.
Hit the stinger.
If you want to chime in on the U.S. Open, you can. Do you think Tiger Woods can contend
this
weekend?
How many calls have we taken?
I think two. Three?
Very disappointing.
I'm going to win the under 15 well, on open line
back
Thursday.
Back to back guess.
Yeah. Okay.
So well, that's part of the equation. Part of the equation.
We're
I'm
going
to win
now.
The bet.
Yeah, we need to turn it up. That's
wide
all.
Open for 40
didn't
minutes.
Really bet,
light
but.
The lamp now on the Hadid Carpet Cleaning Lister lines at 800-636-1067. We actually opened the show talking about Juan Soto. And with the emergence of this 19-year-old phenom, does that make Bryce Harper more expendable? Do you spend all that cash on Bryce Harper as a free agent, or do you just say, we got Juan Soto and we got Victor Robles coming up?
That's what I think.
They got some prospects.
Hey, in Rizzo we trust.
Yeah, absolutely.
800-636-1067. You can chime in on that. We mentioned the Caps, some offseason issues as they had their breakdown yesterday. Barry Zwerluga had an article in the Washington Post about John Carlson. They have $11 million available in salary cap space. John Carlson may net $8 to $9 million of that. Do you give John Carlson the big contract? Because if so, then Jay Beagle, DSP, Tom Wilson, some of these guys may not be back. 800-636-1067. We'll take your calls next here on The Fan. Welcome back. Junkies on 106.7 The Fan. It's Open Line Thursday. 800-636-1067 if you want to call us on the Hadid Carpet Cleaning Lister lines. Let's go right to the phones. Let's go to Dominic. Dominic, you're on with the Junkies. What's going on?
Hey, boys. Thanks for taking the call.
Yep.
What's up, Dom? What's up, man?
Thank you so much for starting some fantasy football talk and football talk in general. So psyched for that. I've been jonesing for information on that for months now.
Yeah.
But the one thing I wanted to talk about today, EB, I'm like 2 years late to the party, but my wife and I started watching The Staircase on Netflix. It's the only thing I want to talk about right now. I have a murder mystery mark.
EB, yeah. Why don't you respond to Dom in Ohio about
here's
about
EB's here's EB's response.
It is 2 years late, Dom. I actually started watching that a few days ago with my wife on a recommendation. I never watched Making Murderer. You guys got into that. And I think Staircase came
out. It was addicting.
Staircase is pretty addicting. I've watched 7 episodes.
Yeah, I'd say you're
in 3 days.
You watch 7,
yeah,
you're in.
We are,
now, some
we
of them are only like 40 minutes, which is big.
Dominic, Eric Bickle is not in the studio right now. That's so he cannot respond to your,
yes,
your comment.
But wasn't the staircase?
That's what I get for tuning in late. Jesus Christ.
Yeah. Thanks for the
thank
call,
you, Dominic.
And well, you're right. Fantasy football, it's right around the corner.
Yeah, your drafts are a couple months away. You're good.
Let's go to
start
Josh.
Prepping now.
In Alexandria. Josh, you're on with the Junkies. Good morning.
Good morning, gentlemen. Congratulations on the Stanley Cup. Seems like you guys had a good time.
Thank you. We
had an amazing run with it. It's been
congrats
awesome.
To everybody.
I followed you guys on the radio, and I had a blast just listening to you guys, so congrats.
Hey,
I
wanted did a great job.
Yesterday was great. I wanted to ask you guys a question. You know, you guys kind of raised this yesterday when you had Rizzo on, and you talked about Bryce and the GM who kind of dogged him. And I'm a big Bryce fan, man, and I don't want Bryce to leave. But am I the only one who's getting a little annoyed with his sort of attitude at the plate? He's not hitting very well. You know, Zuckerman had a tweet last night, talked about the first 20 games, how Soto's numbers were so much better than his. And I don't know, man. I'm just not feeling it, and I want to feel it, and I feel like we need him down the stretch, and I'm just not – I don't know where he's going to turn it on, and I feel like we're losing months.
You just got to hang in there with him, dude. He's an amazing talent. Even though you're saying he's having a down year, look at the power numbers. He's not getting that many pitches to hit. I think he'll come around.
Yeah, but I think, and this is not the only fan I've talked to that feels this way. Some people feel like he's kind of checked out.
Yeah.
That there's
maybe
a sentiment he's kind of checked out.
But they've also messed with him this year, if you think about
that.
It. They had him batting leadoff.
That's
and
true.
I know all the analytics people say you want your best hitters batting leadoff, so they moved him to leadoff. But he's kind of been moved around the lineup versus – he had more stability in the lineup last year.
Yeah. Look, he's got a pretty nice lineup now that Eaton's back and then Murphy's back.
I think Eaton had a couple hits yesterday.
He's been
Eaton
crushing
three.
It since
three hits.
He's come back.
Yeah. I don't mean that he's checked out that he's doesn't want to win, that he's just very frustrated at the way the season's going. There's a lot of pressure. He's probably put a lot of pressure on himself because of the contract issue. He's swinging and missing at a bunch of pitches. Yeah, he's still getting on base because he still walks a lot, but and his power numbers are fine, but he should be better than 224. And a lot of fans are feeling the frustration with him.
Right.
I've talked to a bunch of them. He's not the only one.
Let's go to Mike in Fairfax. Mike, what's up?
What's going on, guys?
What's
just
up, Mike?
Still coming down from all this Caps run.
was, I know there's been a lot of talk about contracts next year and who's coming back and whether it's all going to fit in the puzzle. I just want to send a warning to Caps fans. These guys are ready to cash their paychecks. I mean, long as I've been a fan and paying attention to the NHL, you got to strike while the iron's hot. Maybe Justin Williams gave us a discount in the past. I think Lars Eller might have given us a little bit of a discount.
Eller definitely did. He didn't take the tour. He signed a 5-year, $3.5 million per deal just a few months ago. Mm-hmm. Looking like a nice deal for the Caps, by the way.
Right.
I think Beegs could actually take a discount. Not that he would get that much, but I saw, besides what he told us, that he's going to be back, saw something yesterday where he again said, I'll be back.
Yeah.
They always say they're going to come back, but if they're not that rich, and when I mean rich, I mean in, you know, up the ladder
athlete
rich. Beagle wants to get paid. Smith Pelly wants to get paid. And Carlson's looking at a lifetime of money here, so he's not going to pass up anything. But, you know, if they go other places, that's okay. Good for them. Thank you for winning a cup and, you know, do what's right for you.
By the way, Beagle is such a good dude.
One
of his quotes was something along the lines of, let them get everything done with Carlson. Let's get that sorted out, and then you can get to me. Like, he's such a team
and
guy.
I was going to say, that was exactly what I was going to point to. He's the one guy that's different than all these other guys.
Like,
he's a guy that's not into social media. He's got a flip phone. Mm-hmm. He goes to a cabin and doesn't bring any electronics. I think you can get Beegs on the cheap.
I think so.
Like, he's going to get a raise.
Well,
but
I would never advocate he take a discount. I mean, he's earned money.
Sure. He's definitely earned money.
All these guys would do the same thing. We would do the same thing that these guys would do. They would go.
You exploit your leverage.
Yes.
Right, but he is different. He's not like you and me. He's different.
No, he doesn't like money?
He doesn't care as much as you and me. You care about it more than most people in the history of civilization.
All right, well, that's a little outrageous. I mean, you do like money as well. We don't know Jay Beagle. He may want to go get paid. We don't know. We talk to him for 10 minutes once a week.
No, of course, I'm not suggesting that. I'm just telling you, that's my guess. He's cut from a different cloth than those other guys.
I think he's much more likely to take the Lars Eller route, where he doesn't take the tour, and deal that he thinks is fair for him and for the team, and that he would accept it.
And look,
I agree.
He's his wife, his kids may love the area. He may love the area. So maybe he takes a discount. But
of all of them, he's the most likely.
99% of professional athletes want to get paid. And maybe he's in that 1%.
I think he is.
Let's wait and see what happens.
I don't think Carlson is. He said the Bible.
I don't think Carlson is.
He's a different cat. Every cap that
was on wrong with that, but he's
every
just different.
Cap that I saw that was on the stage for the parade had a Budweiser or a Bud Light. Jay Beagle had a Dasani or an Aquavita. Mm-hmm. He was the one guy I saw that had a bottle of water.
Right.
He's a little bit different.
Yeah. Well, I want him back.
Of course you want him back.
But if, the Devils offered him more money than the Caps, I'd do the same thing.
He might not play for the Devils because they have Devils in their name.
That's true.
He's a religious guy.
All right, maybe
he might say, I'm not going to take your devil money.
All right,
you know what? You might be right. That's how religious he is. Right. He wouldn't play for the
Meanwhile,
Devils.
I would take all the devil money. I would take all of it.
You'd take ISIS money.
No, I wouldn't take – I do have some standards. I don't take terrorist money. I don't take drug money or blood money. But outside of that –
Yeah,
bring it on.
Yeah,
just bring it on. Bring it on over here.
Let's go to Jake in DC. Jake, what's up? You're on with the Junks.
Junks, what's up?
What's up, man? Hey, buddy.
I'm really looking forward to this football season. But EB, I got to ask you, man. I'm loving that. I'm loving that Nets hat. I've been watching
this one.
Been watching the last 2 days, and that hat's money.
Is that a TJ Maxx?
This is a Nike.
It's a Nike version.
Nike has the license.
Where can I get that hat? I searched Google. I couldn't find that particular one.
Cakes nailed it. This is a TJ Silly.
TJ Maxx.
I have no shame.
$10.
I buy 90% of my gear at TJ Maxx or Marshalls or Nordstrom. You know what I mean? I buy them at discount places.
Well, Nordstrom's not discount.
Nordstrom Rack.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
I will never pay full price for anything ever except for Caps playoff gear.
That's my guy.
I basically got smoked on.
Say less.
Yeah.
All right.
Say less.
I was visibly distraught with somebody.
By the way, we're approaching 15.
We are.
I'm excited about that.
Somebody texted me that I guess Washington Capitals Stanley Cup champions beanie already sold out, I guess, on Fanatics. Now I'm sure that they will restock them, especially the closer we get to like fall and winter. And I was a little bit salty that I missed the boat.
Let me say
that.
This.
How are you going to survive without another beanie, Cakes?
No. You must not understand. 50. This one says Washington Capitals Stanley Cup champions. And the I in champions is the Stanley Cup.
So you know what
I need 100 of those.
You need to get a bunch of them in case
you
lose
them.
In case you lose them. Right. You got a bunch. Yeah,
of course I'll buy multiple.
I'm going to say this at the risk of offending people. I don't care. There are a variety of different vendors that were putting out Stanley Cup gear. Some of them were poop. The best was the Fanatics gear. I will say that, in my opinion. The Fanatics gear that I saw that were Caps-related Stanley Cup champions, that was
the best.
Well,
that's the authentic, like, well, there were other stuff. Locker room gear.
No, but there was other stuff in, like, Modell's
right.
that were licensed. You know, Fanatics doesn't have the only license.
Right.
There are other companies that had poop cotton T-shirts from 1986 that you would put over a pig. You know, they didn't have the silly, nice, whatever that material is, like the stretchy, just nice, comfy, soft T-shirts. And some of the designs were just ridiculous.
Well, Fanatics, I saw some of those though, on the way to the
Fanatics
parade.
Fanatics was awesome.
There were 500 people selling counterfeit Caps merchandise yeah. on the way to the parade. Selling T-shirts for $5 that were worth a nickel. Well, they had the they didn't have the logo. It would say, like, DC hockey.
Well, they had lacrosse helmets. I mean, they had lacrosse helmets on the T-shirt.
It was the worst.
They didn't have hockey helmets. Well, they had lacrosse
helmets. Are people surprised that people on the streets are selling awful T-shirts?
Shouldn't be surprised.
Well, Jason bought pictures from a hot dog vendor.
Yeah, it's a great picture.
What are you going to do?
It's a great picture. It'll look like the photographer of the Caps when I frame it up.
Look, I understand times can be tight. And you want a $5 T-shirt? You get what you pay for. If I see you walking around in a DC Hockey World Champs T-shirt, here's what I do: I turn my nose up at you.
I'm gonna buy one and wear it just for you.
You know what the worst were? Those hats that looked like they were stitched in Montgomery Mall, like from one of those.
You mean like the old junk hats that we had made back?
Worse.
We have a few of
like
those.
You can
by
see.
Way.
You know what? You know what's a knockoff when you can see the stitching trail from like. The T right. to the H.
Right.
You know what I mean? They do the T, and then you see a little light stitch when it goes to
that,
the H.
Or you see that
then you
little
see a light
thread.
Stitch when it goes to the
There's
E.
There's like one thread hanging off the end of one of the letters. You look at it, you say, well, I can't put that on my head.
We have come a long way. We made our own hats. I believe your wife went to the mall to do that, didn't she?
Yes.
Silly.
Yeah, I'm going to put one of those on eBay in like 5 years, and it's going to go for like $800. And it's the ugliest hat you've ever seen in your life. It couldn't be uglier.
All right, we'll take more of your calls next at 800-636-1067. Open Line Thursday here on The Junkies.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.